Hello and welcome to The Dorothy Project, the interview podcast about women, like me, who live in a gay man's world. Today I'd like you to meet the award-winning author Juno Dawson. Juno has written 9 young adult novels and 3 non-fiction books, including This Book is Gay, a best-selling guide to life for young LGBT people, and her transition memoir, The Gender Games. Juno also writes for magazines, including Attitude. She's a school role model for the LGBT charity Stonewall, and she runs a queer cabaret night in Brighton called Club Silencio. I visited her at home in Hove, and to be honest, I was a bit disappointed that her adorable Chihuahua Prince wasn't at home. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was kind of the difference between like online spaces. So like you mentioned, obviously we knew each other quite well through Twitter, mm-hmm. and like IRL spaces, where you notice gender more or less, and kind of, you know, chatting about things online. Do you think you sometimes arrive in a physical space and you're like, oh wow, actually everyone here is a
male.
Yeah.
And that was scary, and that was interesting. You know, in my gender transition, it was the more time I spent in male-only spaces, the more I realised I didn't belong there. And now, post-transition, you know, you feel it even more keenly. Obviously, now I'm not going to be troubling XXL, although that was one of those places where I felt very alien. But aside from XXL and Brute and London's men-only gay scene, the nearest thing to that is probably a stadium at Eurovision, where it really is a bit like being in XXL, but with a much nicer vibe and more lighting, much longer queues for the bar. Actually, probably comparable queues for the bar, actually.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? And, like, that's interesting that was one of the things that made you realise that you didn't fit in. Mm. But I think, in terms of how other people see you, I wanted to ask you, like, have you noticed a difference in your experience of kind of going to gay clubs or gay bars? Like, have you changed where you go?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of, and I'm sure this is, I imagine this is a theme that will come up a lot as you talk to various Dorothys, which is the functionality of gay spaces. And I don't think this is wild to suggest that one of the many functions of the gay club, and I do like saying club with an R, is sex. And it can get to a point where, as a woman in that space, you are filling the space of a man they could be having sex with. And this is something that I've experienced. I'll tell you, the exact moment I noticed it, it was super early in my transition. In fact, the first year of my transition at Brighton Pride, I got a comp entry into the Sink the Pink tent, and I was with, I won't name any names because I don't want to get anybody into trouble, I was with a very handsome gay man, and I was there as like his kind of mate, and we were there together. And of course, my friend, you know, he had his top off and was looking all sexy and stuff, and the men, their reaction to me was like, could you please go away, you are literally, you are cock blocking me, kind of. And I wasn't trying to cock block, but in the end I just took myself home. I wasn't really wanted in that space, even though theoretically as a trans person it is meant to be my space as well, kind of. But it wasn't, and it was very clear that it wasn't my space. Maybe that's why so many trans people become drug dealers, because at least then we have a function.
You're like, I'm here, I'm working.
Yeah,
I'm working.
Look, I have a purpose. Do you want your ecstasy or not? Like, come on.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I'm very aware of, like, you don't want a cock block. And, yeah, when is the right time for me to go home? I'm not going to, you know, you make your own way home.
Can you get home all right?
Yeah.
Well, that's when they know that they want you to go home, when they start asking you, how are you going to get home?
Yes, like, you're like, right.
It's fine, I'm going to get an Uber. Okay, if you're, do you want some money for your Uber?
I read something you said about the kind of wish fulfillment for you of, like, writing female characters, like, before you transitioned, and, you know, that a lot of people were like, oh, you're really good at that, you're really inside the mind of a woman. And, like, I thought that was really interesting, and again, I would love to know what your perspective is versus, like, you know, the way you were talking about being in gay clubs, like, then and now, because there is also this thing of gay men and female characters.
and female divas. And this kind of, I think it was Sean Fay who was talking about that kind of like being able to express femininity through kind of like a Gemma Collins meme or through like Moira Rose on Schitt's Creek or whatever. And I was just like really interested in like, at the time, did you think, no, what I have is different? Or do you look back on it now and see a difference?
I think certainly as a child, all my role models were kind of very sort of, dare I say it, slightly camp women from pop culture, be that kind of Shitara from Thundercats or She-Ra, even Sigourney Weaver in the Alien franchise, you know, these kind of very sort of empowered, almost superhero things. So it was slightly like hero worship. And then I think obviously as you become an adult, you realise that women are not A, props, or sort of glamazon sort of figures, but that, and you know, that's something that I live now, which is, you know, I do, through Club Silencio, I can become divas, if you like. I've been Melania Trump, I've been the Babadook, I've been a mermaid, I've been the Rachel character from Blade Runner. So I've done some really ridiculous things. But I do regard it as drag. And certainly when the show is over, I sit here before you, Alice, in my gym kit. I look like Jerry Halliwell in the yoga years.
Another iconic actually, yeah, diva. To be fair. Like, even accidentally, you just can't help yourself.
That is a good point. Samantha Jones. so it's just, yeah, and I think, yeah, it's about that there is possibly the sense that women are characters in men's stories. And that's something that is very much part of our culture. And I don't think that's just to do with gay culture. But I think possibly something about growing up queer, there was something about those slightly heightened women. And it's not necessarily femininity, because I don't think the Ripley character is particularly feminine. But, you know, she's absolutely heightened. She's a superhuman version of femininity. And almost the fact that she's a woman breaking through in a man's world makes her even more powerful and alluring. But it felt like that was, especially growing up in the 80s and 90s, those were the kind of women that we saw. We didn't see anything resembling real women. And do we still? I mean, I don't know. You know, when we look at, I think, things like Girls and Fleabag, there's little glimmers there of the truth and sometimes the darkness of being a woman. But I don't know if those things have quite been embraced by queer culture in the same way that, for example, Sex and the City has. And again, those were four women who were kind of caricatures of femininity.
You still have this danger sometimes of it being a bit 2D and a bit like Yas Queen, and that you're more than a meme.
Yeah. And as well, I think there's something aesthetic there as well. I think it often is about the look. But I think the good news is that some of that now, we've transferred that into RuPaul's Drag Race. So actually, instead of celebrating a woman like, for example, Joan Collins in Dynasty, you can actually just support an actual drag queen. Like, literally pay your local drag queen. So you don't need to take a Gemma Collins, although
we will as well, been embraced. Right?
Oh, of course. But as well, you know, you can actually, and I think maybe that's one of the benefits of the fact that drag culture has kind of broken through and gone so mainstream, because maybe it actually gives women a bit of a day off.
That's such an interesting perspective, because when I've been planning this out and thinking about this, the way I've been thinking about Drag Race and about drag is about the bad side of it becoming mainstream, and the whole, you know, influx of like straight women into drag clubs, mm-hmm. and, you know, the kind of the changing audience. But yeah, you're right. It's kind of like, well, here is a way of expressing that femininity and channeling it and stuff.
And separate, and seeing the difference very clearly, yes, as well. Like, this is a woman and this is a performance. And increasingly as well, that's why I'm always so thrilled to see cis women doing drag. Because then it really highlights that, oh, that's a girl. That's a girl in drag. And I think that's a distinction that I think benefits us all. Because I think very often, and then you can, it creates a feedback loop where you can realise that a lot of the women we see in the public eye are essentially in drag. and that when you see a woman on a red carpet, she's a drag queen, and she is, that is not how she goes to sleep on a night, and that changes expectations of women.
It was interesting because I read an interview with it was Maureen O'Loughlin having lunch with Nigella Lawson. I mean, what a dream. And Nigella described it as her drag, putting on her drag to have her picture taken. And there was that moment, wasn't there, at the Golden Globes with Tina Fey. And they made that joke about it taking like 3 hours to become like the Elephant Man in prosthetics and 5 hours to be in makeup for the role of like regular human woman.
And I bet it is comparable. I think the most recent formal thing I went to was the National Book Awards last year. And I started getting ready the night before because I knew that I wanted a big updo. So I knew that my hair was going to have to be really, really curly. So the night before, so theoretically I started getting ready 24 hours in advance. Like, and that is a weird sort of mental arithmetic that I certainly never had to do pre-transition. And it's absolutely drag. And I think, you know, and again, thinking of feedback loops now, how, you know, drag makeup with contouring somehow filtered down as if we're all meant to be doing that on the daily. That's, I mean, who has the time?
The other thing I was going to ask you in terms of like your kind of experiences, because I think there's what I'm trying to like work out here is that there's a certain sensibility of like pop culture. Like there are certain things that appeal to gay men. And like, I think the thing that I really wanted to ask you about was like, you've obviously been in those worlds. Like we were talking before about like XXL, and like, there are some times when I play songs that push the button, and I'll play a few in a row and Rob will be like, Alice, it's getting a bit Chariots, you know, it's going to get sauna. And I'm like, well, no, I don't know, because
I'm not allowed in. Like, my God, what does Chariots even sound like?
Well, I think it was Into You by Ariana Grande, and then like some really like a Seventh Heaven remix. It was very remix heavy.
Oh, okay. All right. That might explain it. Yeah.
But yeah. And like, I wonder if like you are able to, I don't know, like define what might be in common in that kind of pop culture that seems to attract and appeal to gay men.
I can't really speak on behalf of trans women or gay men because I've only ever just been me, kind of. So I don't know what the experience of other trans women or other gay men was like. I just knew that I was kind of, I just knew, you know, that I fancy boys, and I knew that that made me different at that time I was in, and I still feel different now. But maybe it's just to do with fantasy. You know, these women, and I think it usually is women, because I don't think gay men, and I think this is something worth exploring, like One Direction, because that's, so you've got a thing there, that was just 9-year-old girls. So you get Girls Aloud, 9-year-old girls and gay men. One Direction, they look exactly the same, but they're boys, and all of a sudden gay men are interested.
There's definitely something about boy bands, because I know our friend James, he loves a boy band, but both of us are very aware that there is a limit to how much we can get away with playing.
Yeah.
You know, we'll pop a JLS track on, or, you know, NSYNC.
Backstreet Boys were good, I think, if you had to pick a boy band.
But you know you can't take the piss in the same way that you could play, like, 15 songs in a row by solo female artists, and it would go down really well.
And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a way, because obviously, and again, God, we're tapping into some really big stuff about masculinity and sort of, you know, and obviously I wrote a whole book about, you know, kind of the very binary culture that we live in that expects women to be a certain way and expects men to be a certain way. And if you're a gay man, I think you know very early on that you're failing at what society wants from you. You sense your difference, I think. Although again, it's difficult, because it's possibly because the rules of masculinity are so binding that to look at somebody like Jerry Halliwell, who is living her best possible life but I mean, Ginger Spice, you know, was such a drag queen. To look at her being such a fantasy figure, so sort of free and so experimental, I think there is an element there of you know, kind of, she is, you know, how can I achieve that? And not by, I don't mean becoming Ginger Spice, but how can I attain that sense of freedom and creativity and colourfulness? You know, and I think it's the start of rebelling against society's roles through a proxy.
I wonder if I want, like, I really hope that there will just be more and more kind of diverse culture, pop culture, mm-hmm. more and more, like, you know, like that kids will have like Love, Simon, and they'll have lots of different models to look up to, mm-hmm. and you wonder if there will be an impact, and whether it will just go alongside all those same kind of like ridiculous divas.
Mm. Well, I think again, I mean, and I know at the moment it's becoming slightly cool to slag off Drag Race, but Drag Race hopefully will provide role models for young men that say you can do that and still be a boy. You can become Sharon Needles and still be a man. You don't need to worship Jerry Halliwell or Ariana Grande, because there are men out there doing the most wild and flamboyant and imaginative things, and they still are men, and they are masculine, and they are male, they are boys, and this is what they do. So we don't have to worship caricatures of womanhood. You know, you do you.
So I'm on a mission to find a better word for women who hang around with lots of gay men. Clearly, I'm trying to make Dorothy happen. I'm mm-hmm. considering T-shirts. But, like, what do you think? Because I'm really interested always who has issues with fag hag and who doesn't, because I really do.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. And I think it was League of Gentlemen, wasn't it? That sort of... And of course, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme as well, kind of sent it to Hades a bit. And I think Jonathan Harvey recognised that it was quite a damaging thing. But then, I mean, Will and Grace I thought was quite interesting as well, because obviously it numerous times it did kind of question, why can't Grace sort of get her own thing? Why is she so dependent on Will? And so I think there was a sense that to be a Dorothy or a fag hag or whatever was quite tragic. And so I think it's since the 90s, we've moved on from that. And actually it was somewhat reversed in Sex and the City, where actually Stanford was actually a bit of a sad sidekick. And I remember there was that awful and quite sad scene where Carrie and her girlfriends dismissed Stanford to have girl talk. And I was like, well, what's Stanford going to do? Go sit outside and cry. I mean, that's horrible. I don't know. It's a way, I mean, how can we just be equals? I mean, is it ally? I mean, there's obviously, I'm sure the word ally is something you'll be talking about a lot, but then that seems to suggest that it's quite a one-sided, because I would like to see any sort of man being better allies to any sort of women, and recognising that gay men still do have male privilege within the patriarchy. So allyship kind of has to work both ways, I think. And just today on the Twitter, there was a really lovely thing. A group of gay men have signed a petition coming out in support of trans people called G with the T. And last year we had L with the T. I would love to see a bit more G with the L or L with the G, because there's still a lot of issues around gay men and gay women, and a real division. And I don't think gay men and gay women, I don't think they socialise enough, to be honest. I think there's a lot more common ground there to be found. So I just don't know. I don't know what that word is when there is so much mutual support, I think, needed, because women are a oppressed group every bit as much as gay men are. So it's kind of, it's, maybe they should just call each other comrades or something. I don't know. Just
comrades. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, ally's a funny one. I don't know how I feel about it. I think a lot of the things that are described for being an ally feel really fucking basic to me. You know, I'm like,
don't throw acid on your friends.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what? Like, stick up for people when they're being abused. And also, that's a kind of, it's a very, like, it's a lot about the negatives, and actually there's so many positives in terms of those relationships. And I think if you reduce it to like I've got your back. Like, I mean, that's true. That's obviously true. But there's so much more than that. And the last thing I wanted to ask you was to nominate another Dorothy for me to speak to.
I think I've got a really good one. Ooh. And I hope you can speak to her. I think you should speak to Rebecca Moore, Cock Destroyer.
I tweeted her the other day, actually. I really, really want to.
That would be so good.
I find the whole Cock Destroyers thing fascinating. But also, I don't know if you found this, it is really hard to explain to people.
I was trying to do it, couldn't.
You can't, everyone just looks at you like, okay, so there's these like cheap porn stars.
And cheap?
And you're just saying like, oh, it's only a small fee. And I'm like, it's just very hard to explain. But they, what you were saying earlier about campness, like, it's just incredible. So I will do my best, you know, to not let you down and to get an interview with Rebecca Moore.
Do it.
Well, Rebecca Moore it is then. And we all know she works Sundays, so hopefully that'll make it easier to find time. Talking to Juno, I think she's got a really rare and valuable insight into gender and the communities that form around gender and sexuality. I'd love to know what you think, though. Tweet me at Dorothy_podcast or leave a review wherever you download your podcast from. If you want more Juno, her new novel Meat Market, which is all about the fashion industry, is out now and attracting rave reviews. You can also find her on the cover of the current issue of Attitude magazine with her partner Max. They're some of the 50 people on 25 covers for this month's issue, marking 50 years since the Stonewall riots and 25 years since Attitude's first issue. Next time, I'll be meeting the female drag queen Fanny Minka, who is the world's only travel blogging drag queen, as well as being part of the Sink the Pink drag family, who I have a feeling we might be hearing about a lot on this podcast. See you then.